I would like, first of all, to wish you all a serene and a happy, a spiritually happy new year and decade. For some of you, the decade will have to be the decade of realization. For others, it may prove the decade of striving and achievement, to be followed by realization in the succeeding decade. Throughout the ages, there have always been a few serious-minded, religious-minded people who have been concerned with the world and its growth and its development. And this concern has always been associated, as far as I'm aware, always been associated with conceptions of what ought to be the condition of human beings. Preconceptions of what constitutes their development, their progress, and their fulfillment. In every way. I would suggest something new, assuming that it is new and other people haven't suggested it before, that we be concerned with the development and the fulfillment of humanity without any preconceptions of the shape or even of the nature of that development and fulfillment. This is very important. Because the world has been slowly entering upon a new stage, where formerly there have been local cultures, efflorescences in the cultural sphere and in the spiritual sphere, confined to a certain area of the world. Now the world is so interlinked, everyone is so bound up with everyone else, that one can only conceive of global proportions. Things cannot happen locally anymore. Any one thing affects the world as such. Also, there is a new mental climate. In the old days, the hierarchical conception prevailed. The day of the hierarchical conception is over, has been over for quite a time, in fact. And especially in this century, and in the world of ordinary human affairs, rather catastrophically because of the two world wars, the old hierarchical conception has gone for good. The hierarchical conception had its place, had its value, but it fixed human beings in particular positions and taught them to accept that fixation. But as long as we accept such fixations, there can be no true realization of freedom. There was only the limited freedom which people could realize purely in terms of a self-oriented freedom, dominated by the selfness of the person himself. This age is over. There is no such thing as freedom which is purely self-oriented. There is freedom, that's all. And that freedom, in its essential reality, must apply to each and every single human creature in the world. And the difficulty is that each and every single creature in the world does not really know what freedom means. However, that is one of the things to come, so to say. It mustn't be preconceived as far as the form is concerned. This is very important. There must be no preconception about the form. Not only has the hierarchical order gone, but the human race today is striving after an understanding, not merely a fixed conception, but a deep understanding of the right relationships, of the nature of the right relationships between man and man. Now, this right relationship between man and man can only come in its fullness, in its perfection, in all its beauty, only if man, individual men and women throughout the world, realize self, unselfness. Otherwise, there can never be a right relationship. So you see, the movement towards spiritual evolution is of a nature which we must never try to define, because we'll be caught in the trap of particular conceptions straight away. And if we look carefully at history, history in any sphere, ordinary material history of the peoples, or of culture, or of philosophy and religion and science and so forth, if we look carefully at that history, we will see that the actual developments have emerged only very slightly because of, and very largely in spite of, what the petty little minds of us petty little mortals preconceived. This is very important. It's very hard to see it, because all the historical records tell us, oh, so and so thought this, planned thus, and achieved thus, and in consequence such and such a state came about. Now, this is only very, very slightly true. This is an expression of our human conceit and arrogance. I am the thinker. I know. I do. Who is the doer? Little me? Dear me? Not a bit of it. All that dear me can do is to see that this little me offers the least little bit of resistance to the great movement of life. Life is too immense, too profound, not only in its so-called material aspect, the great evolutionary sweep and so forth, but also in its psychical and spiritual aspects. When you and I speak, when we think, when we feel something, have we any knowledge not just a little idea or conception, but have we any real knowledge of all the effects of just a little conversation, of a little thinking, of a little feeling? We have no knowledge of that. We don't know how, when, just an idea which flashes through your mind or my mind may go through the spaces and affect the minds of other people. We don't know. It may not. What we have to wake up to is the fact of our ignorance. And the fact of our ignorance is not something which has to be combated by the acquisition of knowledge, but by letting what religious people through the ages have called the wisdom of God function in its own way, freely, sweetly, unhindered by my fixed ideas and little knowledges, petty little knowledges. This is difficult. It's very difficult. But it's very important. And if in any little way, any one of us, for even a fraction of a moment, realize that state of transparency, of purity, which allows this invisible, unknown power to function through us, then we may affect history for good without anybody knowing anything about it. Not even God. It just happens. And this is the charm, the wonder, the beauty of the whole thing. See, the wonder and the beauty of things is never at its highest, at its best, unless there is spontaneity. The thing which is engineered, brought about, just lacks that wonderful spontaneity of free creation, thoughtless, carefree creation. So that element of spontaneity has to be there. The coming decades will be crucial decades for the world. Truly crucial decades. And perhaps, this is merely a suggestion, don't take too much notice of it, perhaps round about the end of the 1980s, 1988, 89, 90, 91, those years, we'll see the emergence of the shape of the new world. Whether that shape, that form, is healthy, beautiful, or not, will depend upon us now. Provided we preconceive nothing, this is very important. Whatsoever we preconceive is preconceived, bearing all the distortions which are the consequence of our conditioning, our lack of vision, our ignorance. Therefore, there must be no preconditioning. I beg your pardon. There must be no preconceiving. This is very important. the question arises, how shall we make our contribution then? How shall we be free of preconceiving? Because all the time we form conceptions. All the time we throw out ideas. All the time we are compelled circumstantially to form conceptions and put out ideas. Our business life, our domestic life, all aspects of our life compel this. This is the inescapable part of it. This is where it is a straightforward fact that the devil rules the world. How shall we be freed? What is the one and only thing that we can do as serious-minded, religious-minded people? Those of you who were here last time will recall we spoke about faith, the nature of faith. To be faithful means to be belief empty. As and when I am empty of beliefs, I am full of faith. The unknown, the invisible, the mysterious power which keeps me in complete relationship with reality, with ultimate truth. That is faith. I don't know it. I mustn't seek to know it with the brain, because then I merely formulate that which is infinite. And when I merely formulate that which is infinite, the wonder, the beauty, the spontaneity, the true creative power of it is lost. Then it's no longer faith. It is merely a set of beliefs. Something which was born in the mind, which will go through its cycle and just perish. Faith is never born, it never dies. It's the power of the transcendent operating in a particular way. It is the thing that gives you tremendous dynamism. It doesn't drive you. It supplies you with the dynamic energy which you as a spontaneous living being need. This is faith. And you remember, we considered these points, that there is the element of allegiance where faith is concerned. Allegiance to what? Not to something which we know or formulate. Not just my king and country, my wife and family, or husband and his business, or whatever it is. You see, not anything like that. Allegiance to truth. And truth in the religious sense, the transcendent sense, is indefinable. The allegiance to God, if you like, which is also indefinable. The allegiance to reality, that which eternally is. And that sort of allegiance is possible because oneself spontaneously, inevitably, unavoidably cares for that to which allegiance is given. Are we caring for a will-o'-the-wisp when we care for God or truth? Because it is indefinable, because it cannot be grasped? Everything else I say is a will-o'-the-wisp compared with the truth of God or reality. The indefinable, the unanalyzable, the thing that was never born will never die, the immortal real. Now it is this sort of spirit and understanding, not conception please, but understanding, which as I see it, will mark the new age, which will quite sweetly bring the old age, which has lasted some 4,000 years or more now, to its fulfillment and completion. All that old cycle is over, completely over. It threw up the great religions of the world that we know, the wonderful art and science and philosophy, the storm and the stress, the success and the failure, the joy and the misery. It threw up all that through 4,000 years and more. But that is over. This new wave of life is beginning, has begun actually. And it will grow and grow and swell. And life always sweeps aside whatsoever obstructs it and breaks it. But no man can preconceive the picture of that movement of life. So now, once again, the question, how shall we be in line with this? There is only one thing we can do. And this one thing is the, as far as I see it, the most essential lesson. The most important lesson of the teachings of all the great teachers of the past. You know how they never propounded a philosophy or a psychology. They didn't throw out any intellectualist systems. They only laid emphasis upon purity. The purity of the mind and the heart. Not the acquisition of virtue, but allowing virtue to emerge naturally, spontaneously, by being intensely aware of the actual nature of every situation, physical, psychological, mental, as it arose and when it arose. And in that intense awareness, virtue could flow out unhindered. This is what we can do. This touches our inner life in a manner which need have no hindrance whatsoever from circumstance. My circumstance may be very pleasant as the world sees it and all the rest of it, very wonderful and so forth. It may be horrid, it may be awful. But that circumstance, if I am serious-minded, religious-minded, and really care for the truth, that circumstance can never intrude upon the inner sanctum of my own heart and mind. That can remain pure. This is the one place where the devil can't penetrate and destroy me. Nor can God penetrate and compel me. This is where you as the person, the individual, the unique self-responsible person comes into the story of the universal process. This is where you can make the universe move. Not desiring to move it thus or thus, but just by being pure, clean, open, empty. You see? People have talked about, the psychologists and others have talked about sublimation. I prefer to talk in terms of transmutation. This is where that power of life, that dynamic energy of life, which in its earlier stages inevitably, naturally, and properly expresses itself as lust, becomes transformed into the divine passion, which is transcendent love. Unhurting, undemanding, not expecting, not even wanting to give, but just being. This is the great thing. Just being. For that sort of being is one of the meanings of what the theistic religions have presented as the omnipotence of God, which does everything without setting out to do any particular thing. But everything happens because of this omnipotence. One has to completely give oneself to it. It's the complete giving to that which I don't know, which I cannot grasp, which I cannot seize, which I cannot help, which I cannot hinder, which I cannot nurse, which I cannot destroy. And that is the miracle and the marvel of the whole thing. And in that is the realization of the ultimate reality, if you like to use that phrase, of God, if you like to use the word God, in its own nature. When God is fulfilled, I am not there. I am not there, I am only here. But that fulfillment of God takes place here, where I am. You've got to sort of feel the nature of God. Use the word truth if you like. Use the word reality if you like. The word nirvana if you like. Whatever word you like. But that word stands for the unknown, the ungraspable, the unseizable, the indestructible. Now you see, in terms of the slang expression, brass tacks, it means perpetual mindfulness. Perpetual mindfulness. It means complete intensity of awareness. The giving of your total attention. But this mindfulness has no element of conflict in it. This is important. In the seeing of evil as evil, of good as good, in the pure seeing, there is no conflict. When there is no conflict, the transmutation takes place. Why? Because conflict always means vested interest. When there is no vested interest, this, knew something which is bursting forth, which is still in bud, this new something will emerge happily and healthily. In a shape and a form we can't prefigure at all. Quite impossible. So, this mindfulness, it is only the intensity of mindfulness which is required. Not wanting a result. Not passing judgment. This is good, let me expand it, make it grow. This is evil, let me scotch it, let me destroy it. No, that cannot be done. That way lies the same old self-centeredness. Let be. Supposing you have vast loads to lift. If you can get an elephant to carry it, it's much easier and far more efficient than if you try to do it yourself. Isn't it so? The other way around, if you want to get through a very, very tiny little hole in order to see what is beyond, get a little baby to do it. He'll get through that hole far more easily than yourself. That is all. It's just that. Be sensible. Now this remaining mindful through the day. Is it easy? Are we mindful through the day? We must face the fact for ourselves. Watch how our day is filled with the selfish drive all the time. All the time. Either consciously or unconsciously. When it is conscious, the unconscious and conscious work together. But it is always the selfish. And the form of the selfish drive is determined by our conditioning from childhood onwards. And we are all the time blinded by it. We don't see it. This is one of the main reasons why we can't be mindful. Our eyes are blinkered all the time. And to help the blinkering of the eyes, the intellect, the logical talking brain here, constantly invents excuses. Oh, just another little drink won't do us any harm. And then when you get that super earnest type of person who won't take the other little drink, you see, he or she makes a face as long as that and fights against the other little drink. That's no use, that sort of mindfulness. If the mindfulness produces conflict of that nature, it is useless. It won't produce vision and understanding. Understanding is the liberating force. Mere intellectual perception is only a very tiny preliminary step. But it, mere intellectual perception cannot do anything. If mere intellectual perception is allowed to go its way, it will lead straight away into conflict. The logical mind says, oh, this is bad. And the logical mind can't do anything about it but fight against it. But understanding is the intellect and feeling in such harmony, so suffused with love, that it absorbs whatsoever is, what we commonly call good, what we commonly call bad. They are both absorbed into our being, and in that absorbing, there is the transformation. There is a digestion going on in your psyche. And the digestive juices, the psychical digestive juices, do the needful. Does my intellect digest my physical food? Not at all. It just goes on despite me. Isn't that so? Now here, the analogy holds good in the psyche too. In so many cases, the analogies don't hold good. But in this case, I think it does. So you see, when this understanding is there, this absorption into one's own being, and the awakening to its actual real nature through intense attentiveness, the transmutation takes place. And as the transmutation takes place, all the time, this unknown, mysterious, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent power operates and releases the new shape which the new life wave will ultimately bring forth. And so oneself is a participator with God, a sharer with God, if you like. This, to me, is a profoundly real meaning of what the Christians call fellowship with God. But they talk of it after the death of the body and the perpetuation of a particular consciousness. Probably name and address will all be attached to it, you see, which is enjoying this fellowship with God, you see, singing psalms and hymns of praise and so on. But beware of wanting to be one of the instruments for bringing forth the new age. Don't want to be it. This is important. Because any such wanting always implies the vested interest. And every vested interest is a real power for limitation, not for freedom. There are, as we know, so many societies and groups existing all over the world, well-intentioned, good-hearted, and all the rest of it. But how many of them have real insight into the nature of things? This is the important thing. They haven't. That's why they merely act as little eddies in the main stream. The eddy is just an obstruction to the main stream, in actual fact. It may be quite exciting and interesting at the moment, But well, all right, when the little excitement and display is over, then what? The pantomime is finished. And that's all it is, a pantomime. That real insight which is needed is what we must be concerned with. Appreciate the special problem of this new age, which is just in the bud stage. The special problem. No preconceptions about the form of it. And when there are no preconceptions about the form, about the procedure, the question, what do we do about it, becomes totally meaningless. We are so conditioned throughout the world that the moment we aspire to anything, we immediately think in terms, now what do we do to fulfill the aspiration? The fulfillment of the aspiration without doing anything is so utterly foreign to our nature, so utterly strange and new to us, that we feel that we are just lost. But that is not the case. If we do succeed in being completely and properly lost, do you know in which lost property office we will be found? In the office named God, named truth, named reality. That's where we will be found. If we can be really lost in that sense. Look at the extraordinary tenacity with which the followers of the theistic religions hold on to the idea of personal survival. No. Must have a label with name and address, security. This miserable perishing thing, this perisher, has got to survive. What utter nonsense. See, I've often spoken about death. Death which fulfills, which consummates, which brings to perfection. If I have understanding, which means that I also have real love, which means that there is no selfness, then death truly consummates, truly brings to fulfillment and perfection. But if I do not have understanding, death merely kills. You see the difference? About 2 months ago, or 3 months ago maybe, I think I said something like this, you remember? Death is the portal to immortality. But it is not, immortality is no personal thing, no limited thing. Nothing limited or personal can ever be immortal. And that portal works both ways. If I understand death really, then there is a continuous inflow of life, of truth, of reality, from the unmanifested, the unformed, into the formed, and back again to the unmanifest, from the formed and the manifest. This is a reality. We don't know these things at all. That is why when a scripture gives some sort of hint about it, we totally fail to understand what it is. Sri Krishna, talking to Arjuna, talks about the manifest, and he talks about the unmanifest. And then he says something which, as far as I know, which is very, very little, because I haven't read all the scriptures in the world, he says something which does not occur in any other scripture, Hindu or Buddhist or anything. This is the one and only place where I have seen it. Higher than that unmanifest is another and unmanifest, which is my home. What on earth does it mean? People have never understood this. Consider, it is a fact of our existence that the thought or the feeling which was not there, unmanifest, emerges in our psyche. The so-called physical atoms and molecules and cells composing the body, which were not there, have emerged and become apparent as the body. And just as the thought and the feeling passes away into the non-manifest state, so does the body go back into the primordial atoms and whatnot. It is once again unmanifest. So there is manifest and unmanifest in interplay in the total world process. But that which is transcendent is the entirely unmanifest. Altogether unmanifest. We can discover laws, as we say, of nature and this, that and the other, the laws of the operation of the mind and so forth. Those laws are the unmanifest aspect of the world process. They are the metaphysics of physics. Physics, from the Greek physis, means nature. That which is visible, the visible universe and so forth, physis. So physis contains within itself a metaphysis, that which is unmanifest but which nevertheless is the controlling power which we, through our science and all the rest of it, slowly discover and say that such and such is the law of nature by which this process takes place. The law has no objective existence. It is this extraordinary power which brings forth the particular pattern which is visible to us. But neither this nor that, the so-called manifest or unmanifest, is the transcendent, is God. Other than that. The Upanishads put it this way when they said of the Atma, neti, neti. It is not this, it is not this, it is not this. And they also made, and here of course the Upanishads are the only thing which have made that statement in precisely that way. You find it in Christian mysticism and other places too, but not precisely in this form, this psychological form, which is very, very important, because that is a thing which conveys to our intellects something of the nature of the reality. That from which speech and mind return, not having found. This is the significant part of it. Not having found. Therefore that transcendent, that nirvana, that unformed, unmade, unbecome, represents not merely the unmanifest, which the non-being which becomes being, and the being which returns into the non-being in continuous interplay like that. Not that, but something which is utterly transcendent. Now, it is through man that has come the vision of that utterly transcendent. These were the great spiritual teachers, the founders of the religions and those like them. Realization took place through them. A realization of that transcendent. We have the oldest records of all this are in the Old Testament and the Rig Veda and so forth. See? And Adam used to talk with God. That is to say, actually, God did all the talking and telling him what to do. But nevertheless, there is a significance in that statement. And we have a whole succession of great ones. They were all great ones, make no mistake about it. The Jews will, of course, point to Moses as the supreme one, the founder of the Judaic tradition, won't they? Isn't that correct? And the Christians will point to Jesus Christ, you see. But they are not the only ones, by a long chalk. Note carefully how it is all presented. The Lord God makes his covenants with man in the Old Testament. After Adam sinned, he made the next covenant with Noah. Then the next covenant with Abraham. After Abraham comes Moses. That's the order, isn't it? Yes. And later on, with the post-exilic prophets and so on, he makes still another covenant. There was some 7 covenants in all, were there? Or something like that, anyhow. And they are of 2 kinds. The Jehovistic and the Elohistic. Don't let me digress into details about all that because we'll get off the main track then. You see, these covenants are formed. But who are the great ones mentioned after Adam? You get Enoch. You get Joseph, who sees God face to face and does not die. Very important. Moses sees God face to face and does not die. Although it is generally stated that no man can see God and live. After that, Elijah. Moses is in the Mount of the Lord 40 days and nights. Elijah spends 40 days and nights in the Mount of the Lord. Jesus Christ, 40 days in the wilderness. With the Buddha, the figure chosen is 49. Different cultures have their own special figures for their own special reasons. And the days and nights certainly don't mean our 24 hours business that we know. They have profound meanings. So there is the revelation of the transcendent in that Westernation tradition, the Semitic tradition, the Judeo-Christian tradition, and also in the Muslim, the Islamic tradition. There is the revelation of the transcendent. And of course, in India and in China, through people like Lao Tzu, there is the revelation of transcendence. But you'll notice that in every case, there is a certain element of formalization, a certain element of definition. That great wave, at least 4,000 years old, that's finished. The new wave will cut out the element of formalization. Which means that whatsoever forms appear will be seen in their, I mustn't say anything absolute, will be seen in a clearer and better light than in the old days. forms will appear, but the generations of the future, the coming 100, 200, 400 generations, will not grasp and hold on to forms as we have held on to them through these thousands of years. This is the doctrine. This is the holy teaching. And we must preserve it. What do we preserve? The word. The brown paper. The goods we have thrown away into the waste paper basket. We have preserved the brown paper. We shan't make that mistake in the coming 4,000 years. But it won't be 4,000, it'll be shorter and shorter. The curve of development, when the development takes place, it starts like that, you know, the two axes which we have. It starts like that and gradually does this, and then that's how it goes up. Hyperbolic, isn't it? Yes, that's it. Something like that. And perhaps the release of new sensitivities. That is to say, the sensitivities are there already and have been through the ages, but they have been more or less lying dormant, more or less fixed deposit accounts which are in the bank, which have never been utilized. But now they will get utilized. Sensitivities of mind, of psyche. A profounder, deeper awareness of the nature of wholeness, which is holiness. In the coming 2 decades, particularly, will have a great influence. But the decades, as far as we are concerned, have to be free of all the defects of the past. And those defects stem from delusion, from greed, and from hate. The Buddhist classification is a very convenient one. And a very practical one for the purpose of understanding these things. Go ye forth and teach the nations. And what was the consequence? Who went forth and what did they teach? And what happened to the nations? Shapes have improved. In certain parts of the world, it's taken many, many centuries. In this country, we are fed, we are clothed. But what am I who am fed and clothed? A human being or a petty little devil? Do we want petty little devils well fed and clothed? And if you take the census, I think they will easily win the majority vote, won't they? See the tragedy of it? Go ye forth and teach the nations. What has been taught? The imposition, the compulsion of the free individual to believe instead of releasing his power of faith is one of the devils, the devilish forces. But to liberate the individual by letting him become liberated, not I liberate you or you liberate me, it cannot be done. All these delusions must disappear. And they all stem from selfness. Man has to free himself from the bondage imposed upon him by virtue of his constitution and its evolution through the animal world, through the primates. You see, our selfness has its roots in the necessity. It is a real necessity, the necessity and the passion to survive. The preservation of the species, the preservation of the individual. This has been nature's task, and it has worked successfully right up into the animal world, and then nature succeeded in producing this mutation, which produced ultimately us. But we have this marvelous capacity which of turning inwards, and it is we who have created the psycho-spiritual world. And it was necessary to release this psycho-spiritual world in order that unmanifest and the manifest may interact in the right way ultimately. And that takes place in order that the supremely transcendent, possible to man's vision and realization, can begin to operate. Who knows what the future holds? No one. I don't. But it is extraordinary. It is something which fills one with awe. If we just let this be a sort of flight in fancy, we just come back to earth with a bump, as we say in ordinary parlance. We must be careful not to let it be a flight in fancy, because then it is mere wishful vaporizing, which has no use whatsoever. In fact, it is harmful. All the dear religious people have spun beautiful cobwebs enough of the lovely states of heaven and this and that which you will enjoy, provided, of course, you join our society. It's always that, you know, they're just a little contribution. No subscriptions are laid down, but there is a bowl. We have to be free of it all. I will present you the right kind of bowl which we ought to carry about when we beg. Beautiful, large, big bowl, minus its bottom. And you will find that lovely bowl will turn into a fiery ring of adoration. Then you'll know what it is to worship. Because you hold nothing back. Let everything go through. It's the disappearance of selfishness. So this purity, the sealers, are the absolute foundation. Without the sealers, we have merely made a flight in fancy to amuse ourselves. Opium eaters. But with the sealers, the reality is there, which neither you nor I perform or carry out or do or enhance or anything. That unknown, invisible reality does it all. So, I wish you a happy and a serene decade. For realization, which won't be your realization or my realization, but it realizes itself through this, when this does not obstruct it. Then the full human all over the world will come to flower. And Adam's redemption shall have taken place in full. You find this topic, you know, of sin, the fall, and redemption come through every religion in some form or other. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, it has been put in the most matter-of-fact form and the most dramatic form and the most terrifyingly dramatic form. Look at the figure on the cross. Look at it and go right into the heart of that sorrow and terror and complete emptying into darkness, so to say, without merely wallowing in emotion. This is very important, and this is very difficult. Minus the wallowing in emotion, but experience the total intensity of it as the emotional type tries to experience. But if we are not merely emotional about it, we will experience it many, many, many times more intensely than the emotional person. And in that we shall see something. Because the ultimate light is the dark. I mentioned this last time, you may remember. Dark with excessive light, as Dionysius the Areopagite said. Milton in his Paradise Lost has used that line, dark with excessive bright. He doesn't say light. That is the ultimate truth. All the religions of the past expressed it. That is to say, ultimate only insofar as we human beings can go. As and when we are different and have fulfilled our purpose, there will come on the earth another kind of creature who will be as much ahead of me as I am, if I may presume to say so, ahead of the chimpanzee. So, is your concern going to be religion, of which the various garbs, Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, Zarathustrian, are all different little aspects? If your concern is the real total whole, then through you, that transcendent reality will operate.